Fun sidetrack. My cousins and I saw the blonde man, the blonde Asian man, at Trader Joe's in Manhattan a couple years ago.
You saw Jun Tao?
Yes!
That's awesome! Did you scream at him?
No,
Jun Tao!
Because I am Jun Tao! Not, because I am a nice New Yorker who does not scream at celebrities, though my embarrassing one was Jon Stewart because I literally pointed at him and then like tracked him with my finger.
Every now and then when you actually get those like random like celebrity encounters, like you don't know how you're gonna react. You
no,
really don't.
No, I fucked it.
Like even when I'm going to like a meetup where like I know I'm gonna interact with this person, but then like your brain goes elsewhere when you're like, oh, it's my turn, I get to hug this person. Oh my god.
Yes. That was like, me with Stan Lee.
That was me with Anna Kendrick.
Oh, that's valid.
It was one of the most like awkward things where I'm like, I didn't ask for that. I'm just like, oh my god, I get to do this. Yay. Like, oh, like I felt, I'm like, that is not a good start. But well.
Wait, I will have to say my favorite freeze moment was, why I keep doing this. Oh no, it was, I saw Jun Tao at Union Square Whole Foods. That I need to make that correction now. The Trader Joe story is that I ran into Gilbert Godfrey and I froze.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Did you hear him talk?
No, I just saw his face. But I've heard
that that's an act.
Yes.
Like, that's not his real
voice.
Yes,
that's what I'm also concerned about. Because I was like, wait, I should have said something. My big regret that I didn't actually, I think I told you this too. My big regret of somebody that I didn't actually stop the first time was Rob McElhenney of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yes, you did mention me that. But you got the second try.
Yes, I did.
You got him the second time around.
Yes, I somehow got a second chance encounter and I got a photo with him. And he is a very lovely
man. It was meant to be.
Love him.
There's some people who are really good about that. And at the same time, like I don't know if I told you this one, but I'm glad that I had a witness to this. Where like it was intermission at a Broadway show. It was me and my sister. My sister was looking for her friend who was like actually seeing the same show. They found out like going through Instagram, like they posted like, oh, hey, like doing this. And like, oh, let's meet up in the lobby during intermission and say hi. So she's looking around for her friend. I'm looking around too, even though I've never met this person in my life. So I don't know why I'm looking. And the second I thought that, I just see a tower of a man walking through the crowd. It is Phil Jackson.
Oh.
Yeah. I met Phil Jackson and I'm like, and I called, and I said it almost like a whisper, but almost like a whisper yell. I'm like, Phil Jackson. And he looks at me like, I'm a huge fan, sir. Shook his hand. He gave me like a nod and a wink and walked away. And I'm like, I looked at my sister. That happened, right? You saw that? You see, I'm not getting a picture with the guy because there's no way we're both going to be in frame, but you saw that, right? Okay.
We're both not going to be in frame.
He's 6'10", I'm 5'2".
You're gonna be that photo of Michael Jordan holding Vern Troyer by, like, the head.
Exactly.
Like, oh, no, Michael Jordan, that's Shaq, that's Shaq and Vern Troyer.
Either way, it don't matter. It's gonna feel like that. Welcome, everyone, to the Movie Masochist Podcast, where two friends try to find the fun in painful films. My name is Joby.
Hello, I'm Kim.
And yay, we're back to actually painful films.
Oh my dear
gosh.
Lord.
Before we start, I gotta ask this right away. Which do you like better, Mortal Kombat 95 or this one?
I at least felt like I paid attention to Mortal Kombat more than this movie. But it's hard because I feel like the campiness that I wanted for Mortal Kombat lived in this movie, but this movie was also not that great.
But in the worst way possible. Like, I felt like I needed to watch it again. I chose not to.
Same.
Because I had enough points.
Same.
At the same time, I honestly didn't really understand what was going on.
Okay, so it's not just me that kind of got lost in like what was going on.
Yeah. And that was part of that's one of my bad points.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that in a little bit.
We really done goofed.
This did not hold up in many a ways. And again, that was a big concern of mine, was the fact that, again, Todd McFarlane's artwork, his action figures, they are top notch. They
right.
are really good.
Right.
So this being a 97 movie, I'm like, it's going to be rough because now it's obsolete technology.
I was willing to forgive it because it is something like that. I was actually going to ask you, at some point, of your thoughts of their use of practical and CGI. So, like, practical makeup versus, like, their CGI moments.
Yes, yeah. I did like some of the stuff there. Like his suit looked really cool. I thought that was pretty solid. I actually, and I have it right here. So one of the groups that did some of the practical effects was a KNB effects group.
Ooh, who's that?
Which is really well known for The Walking Dead. They do all the stuff for that. So like they do really good stuff. So like even like his suit and the burn make and everything, it actually looked pretty good. That part actually kind of goes into my good points, I guess. Like to an extent, it kind of does. But I thought it was okay.
Okay.
And I know that they had to. It's like we're gonna give him a suit, but we have to make the cape CGI.
Yeah.
But the cape is a big part of the comics.
Yeah.
So I understand why they did it.
And it's also like for me, it would have been really difficult to make that real and then also have it work in a specific way. Because like the only like current comparison that I can give it to is Doctor Strange's cape, and that looks pretty good. For our technology now.
Yeah, that is the best comparison we can do. At the same time, it doesn't really hold up considering that that's a fixed form piece of clothing. Yeah, it's a fixed form, so you don't have to do all these crazy wavy things where it shoots out here or it expands here into wings or whatever it is. Like you're not doing all those things. Spawn, they are.
Right.
So to play with those practical effects and also to make these things as gigantic as possible, it looked pretty rough. But at the same time, again, 97, it does get a little bit of a pass. It's okay. We're like, okay, we're taking it for what it is.
You've also seen Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which is another 97 film. So I was curious if you saw kind of like the similarities of like their technology limitations.
It was very similar.
Oh, very, okay.
To the point where I actually paused the movie at one point especially when the Violator turned into his demon form, because I thought it looked a lot like the gargoyle that's in Annihilation.
Oh.
There were some similarities with like the giant horns, the kind of like the big mouth of it all, but the Violator essentially just kind of looked like how they had it in the comics. So like, okay, Mortal Kombat came after the comics.
Right.
So I guess they kind of just took the same kind of character design and flipped it, you know. It happens. It's not a big deal. But there was a lot of similarities between the two. There was also a lot of similarities with the sound effects.
Oh.
I kept hearing all of, like, the swishing, the lightning, the explosion. Like, it sounded so much like Mortal Kombat to me.
Ooh.
To the point where, like, it was a little distracted where I'm like, are we going to Outworld right now? What's happening here?
I'm concerned.
Concerned about what?
I'm concerned that they have elements like that. Like, they're very near... I mean, for you, they're, like, nearly one-to-one for a movie that
almost,
came.
Almost, yeah.
I'm curious if they were produced by, like, similar people, either by studio or...
That would make the most sense, in my mind, where they sent it to the same group to do the sound mixing or sound editing, and they use the same effects.
Or they have the same sources, because, I mean, I think I've talked about this in a previous podcast, but, like, I've heard music that I've used in, like, college projects, and we almost use the same music for our podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, everyone has access to this.
I heard this song in a commercial, like, the other week. I don't remember what it was for, but I heard it for a commercial. So that's completely fine. Like, you know, audio sources come from everywhere. And it was basically a neutral point to me. It didn't make or break the movie for me. It was very much a neutral wick. It stuck out. So I'm like, all right, I have to make that point. So I guess with all that said, let's jump into this.
Okay.
No, I'm gonna start with the bad point. Oh, with the good points, I guess.
Okay.
And then if you want to start with the bad points, we'll flip flop that. Just for the sake of this is kind of like somewhat adjacent to what I was saying before.
This is such a hard breakdown for me, only because I think I nitpicked too hard. Because
okay.
It was so hard to pay attention to this film.
It really was. No, I completely agree. Where like my good points, I have one actual good point, an asterisk from that good point is my second good point. And my last one is just kind of like, it's also a bad point, but screw it. I'm going to use this because I don't have a third and I don't feel like watching it again.
I think I like stretched. Like, the first good point is like, well, I scraped the bottom of the barrel. The second good point is like, I need more time to analyze what the hell I've watched. And then the third, I'm like, did I pay attention long enough in this film to actually call this a good point?
I'm intrigued. I am very intrigued. And I also just realized my good point, like my actual, like my first one that I feel like is the strongest, is only there because I did prior research. Like I was reading some of the Wikipedia page. And if I didn't know all this stuff, I don't know if I would have one.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. So I'm going into this. Let me find
it. You did more than me.
Wikipedia page real quick. I'm just going to read this bit. So Michael Jai White, the guy who played Spawn, he had to endure 2 to 4 hours of makeup work, including a full glued on bodysuit, yellow contact lenses that irritated his eyes, and a mask that restricted his breathing. He said that his long-term experience with martial arts helped him endure the uncomfortable prosthetics, giving him a strong will and unbreakable concentration. The makeup for the clown took 8 hours to apply at first, but they later got the process down to 4 hours. It left him with blisters and calluses on his face and neck. Leguizamo found the heavy prosthetics of his costume for the clown to be claustrophobic, and the costume lacked any kind of cooling system, so he would sweat excessively. He compared the situation to wearing a full body condom. So with all of that in mind...
I have loved John Leguizamo for a very long time. I respect this man very much. He seems like such a fun dude. That is the greatest description of being in one of these things I have ever heard. That is A+.
Yeah. And from a cosplay point of view, like I've seen people wear these silicone suits and they complain that it's like you sweat out a liter a day, like in an hour.
Yeah.
That's rough. So for him to have to go through that with 8 hours worth of prosthetics and then film, my good point, considering the uncomfortable prosthetics, they did a pretty solid job.
Oh,
acting-wise, yes. Portrayal-wise, everything looked pretty good. And I'm actually just going to say my second point already, just because, it's the asterisk.
Okay, that's fine, that's fine.
Special shout-out to John Leguizamo for being the best worst character ever.
Okay, so that's my last point. That was my last point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it was if he was good enough because, am I biased because I like John Leguizamo? Or, like, was he actually a good, bad character?
Yeah, I want to say the latter.
Okay.
Just for the sake of, like, we're supposed to hate this guy. We're supposed to find him disgusting. We're supposed to find him just appalling to look out, to be on screen. We're not supposed to like him.
Right.
But he does it in a way that's really entertaining.
Right.
Where I'm like, I'm still intrigued by you, even though I'm like, we didn't need half the stuff that you did. Like, all, like, the CGI gas that came out of his butt, like, him eating maggots. I'm like, did we need all that? Probably not. Did you do a good job selling it? You absolutely did.
My thing with him is that this is like Kano. He's like the only character who's like hella obnoxious, which is why like we have to pay attention to him while everyone else falls so flat. Like, I'm sorry
they're
to Spawn.
They're pretty one note. Yeah,
like...
no, absolutely. Yeah, so that was actually another thing. That was a sentence I skipped over. And he said, and Michael Jai White said, it was a challenge to make the audience sympathize with a government assassin who comes back from hell. And that's a fair point.
That is true. I will agree.
So I feel like if I knew more about Spawn and like reading up on some of the things after the fact, like on some of these characters and their background, it makes more sense. I feel like they could have given us more. And they could have made this a little bit more seamless because, again, it did seem a little confusing, a lot of confusing. Here and there, where if we got a little more backstory, if we got a little bit more, like, explanation as to their motive, as to why they're doing these things, as to what is actually going on, that would have helped a lot. And I don't know. I'm just going to leave it at that. I just don't know.
It's like, now we're really kind of, like, really scraping.
I'm reaching.
Yeah, it's like I'm so much.
These. Yeah. So we got the three good points, 2 for me, 1 for you. What else you got?
So again, I'm working backwards now.
That's fine.
To John Leguizamo point, he's such a joy to watch on screen, and I love that he just went full, like, obnoxious, kind of like campy.
He went full ham.
Oh yes,
just
yes.
All in on it.
And in the parts that I was like fully focused on this film, they really went into some really funny kind of campy moments, and that's my second good point. It's kind of the campiness that I wish we got in Mortal Kombat, but we just didn't get it. And to name one very specific scene in this film, I loved at the very beginning, the top-ish of the film where Martin Sheen's character takes his cigarette and then puts it out in the bowl full of scorpions. And I'm like, that's so extra, and I love it. Like, it's one of those... That's a moment of, like, show, don't tell that I love, where it's like, this is the direction the film is going, and I'm like, I couldn't pay attention long enough if that was a theme throughout the whole film, but, like, my brain was just like, too many things are going, too many graphics coming out of nowhere.
And you realize that all of the transitions between scenes... We're all in these, like,
yes,
there is a fire that goes across the screen, yes, or like a flash of this and this and that. I'm like, was all this necessary?
Yes. Yes. That goes into like my bad points of the film.
You could have cut your budget down a significant amount if you didn't do all that.
I'm like, how much does it cost to do motion graphics in 1997? Or not even motion graphics, but like a transition like that.
Must cost a lot, considering that their opening sequences look like a freaking shitty indie grunge video.
That goes also into my bad points that we will
fantastic
talk about that.
All right, let's get there quick. I got one more good point. You got one more good point.
All right, let's go.
And this is the biggest asterisk. And again, it's kind of going into the whole thing of like everyone kind of being one note. There was really no one I had to be, like, attached to.
It's so hard, because you're technically supposed to be attached to the main character. And I'm like, I really couldn't. Like, it was hard, because I'm like, what is your struggle? And it didn't land on me very well by the end of the film.
So, like, I understand, like, the struggle of, like, he wants to be with Wanda. He wants to be that family man again. They played it up here and there, like any scene he was with Cyan, like the little girl, but they missed the mark a lot of times, and I will get into that during one of my bad points. But essentially, and again, this is also a bad point, the fact that it turned into one of those things where I was the most attached to the dog, and I'm like, it's a good thing you put someone in here that I actually give a shit about. I'm like, if anything happens to this dog, I will riot. I'm looking at this, I'm like, are you going to kill the dog so that he has a John Wick moment? Like, was this what's going to happen right now?
So here's the tying thing. I was also going to bring up how much this movie felt like two very big franchises. I was going to mention John Wick, because yes, the dog, but also John Leguizamo is in John Wick.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I think I mentioned that in the teaser. And then also with Spawn himself, just aesthetically, I was very much reminded of Deadpool.
Mixed with Venom?
Yeah, pretty much at that point. So we got franchises upon franchises just kind of popping
up. In all fairness, I remember growing up, I always confused Spawn with Venom all the time.
Did you say that last time? I don't remember.
I didn't. Okay. I haven't brought up Venom yet.
Okay.
But I always confused the two growing up. Because, like, character design-wise, look-wise, and everything, and me not knowing too much about comic books, yeah, I got confused. But yeah, there's all my all my good points. I'm like, all
right, do you want to hear my absolute stretch?
I love the puppy.
Sure. My absolute number one stretch. I kind of enjoyed the music in the film.
That's cool. All right. I'll give you that. Grunge music, like, slash, wasn't it, like, Marilyn Manson? I want to say it was, like, the main song.
I think so. For some reason, Marilyn Manson's voice does not, like, strike well, like, in my memory. But
I'm making that my Google, so let's have fun.
All right,
Yeah, keep going.
I just kind of enjoyed it. I think it was a fun time, and they used it well. Like, they picked the correct genre for a film like this. And if it is Marilyn Manson, kudos to them. I don't know how much that
cost. It was Marilyn Manson.
Good. I wonder how much that costs for them, because I'm assuming Marilyn Manson costs a fortune.
Let's see. We got, I'm just going off of artists and bands that I remember. So Marilyn Manson's one. Korn is in, is on here. Metallica.
Is this why I liked it so much?
Prodigy. Silverchair, Incubus, Slayer.
I mean, I don't listen to these bands on the regular, but I'm like, oh, these are adjacent to my typical playlist, so.
I will listen to that kind of music working out. So just like that angry, like in your face, like I'm like rage mode type music. That's why I go for
it. I like how that's what you do. I see, I zone out, so I need something to like help me zone out. But I last weekend when I went to Jose's class, he did play like heavy metal, and I for some reason I was like, whoa, I just zoned out.
Yeah. No, that's my thing. That's my jam. I was even talking about this the other day at the martial arts school. So, when I first started out, the go-to thing was Rage Against the Machine. That used to play all the goddamn time at the martial arts school when we were training and stuff. And this is stuck in my head. So that kind of vibe, I just associate with like, okay, like this time to kick some ass. Let's go. But also when I was in the weight room at the in high school, and it's a weird Pavlovian thing now with the weight room. I don't know if you've ever been to a high school weight room, but there is a sort of smell that comes out of it.
You know, I mean...
It smells like Teen Spirit mixed with metal.
I was going to I was going to say it smells like Teen Spirit. I was going to say, did y'all have Axe? You're older than me, so I'm like, did Axe exist?
Axe was later down the line, I believe. Or we could have.
Or whatever there was... It was just such a visceral smell.
They wouldn't really use that in the gym, but definitely after. People had a bunch of it. So that was definitely a thing. But again, there's just that smell of like sweat and steel when you're in that weight room. And every day they will play the same CD. Yes, I said CD.
First of all, I forgot what a CD was.
Yep, they played Drowning Pool every day.
What is Drowning?
In the weight room.
I don't remember.
You remember the song Bodies? Like Let the Bodies Hit the Floor?
Yes, okay.
That's Drowning Pool. So the album that came off of, we would play every day. So anytime I hear one of those songs, I just get like a slight whiff of that room.
Oh.
Like I'm like conditioned. Like there's like an olfactory thing that just sucks. Snaps in my brain where I'm just like, okay, all right, we're doing it.
That sucks. So wait, hold on. So-
but it also gets me in the mood to lift and to actually try things. So I'm like, it's Catch 22.
So my thing is like, what song from that like out? Well, hold on. Is Let the Bodies Hit the Floor on that album?
Bodies is on that album. Yes.
Now, what is the song? So it's any song that will send you back.
Any song from that? Because okay. I got the album after the fact because I actually really liked it, and it got me in the mood back in high school to lift and everything like that. So all that kind of music kind of just built upon itself.
Oh my God.
Which led into like, they use a lot of that kind of music in WWE back in the day.
Mm-mm.
So like anytime they had like, here's the theme song for Backlash coming up this weekend. And I'm like, I'm going to take that song and download it and put it on a CD and burn it into a thing. So I have a workout mix.
Like a burning CDs. Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't done that in a long time. Playlists don't feel the same.
I'm sorry, when was the last time I had a laptop with a CD drive?
My 2012 MacBook Pro still has one, and I basically kept that thing for years just because I needed it to play DVDs.
I have one too, and it crapped out back in like July last year.
Oh, that blows.
Yeah.
That
blows. So I'm like, do I get this fixed or do I just, you know, take the L? I don't know. But... Are we done with the good points? Music. Yes, music. No, we were talking about the music. That's where we were.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yes. So again, the music in this film, appropriate, made sense. I would not listen to it probably outside mm-hmm. of the thing. Like I would have to be in the mood for it. But
yeah,
it set the tone for the film well. Like
okay,
the opening couple of songs and. They just made sense. Like it wasn't one of those situations where I just keep thinking about Justice League and how in
The music cues.
Yeah, the music cues for I'm sorry, I just Diana. Like you just keep no, I was thinking of actually Arthur. So like they used the White Stripes For the original Justice League. The Justice League.
The Whedon version.
No. Justice League. Justice League.
I knew you were going to say it.
I don't know. But are you okay?
For some reason, that just like... It sounds like a cringe thing for me for some reason. I don't know why.
Whatever.
Whedon version. Got it. Justice League. I'm not going to say it, Justice but go ahead. Continue.
Okay. For the 2017 version, that was such a very big moment for me versus how they re-edited it for the Snyder Cut. Because it just, again, music just changes the tone of, like, your character in, like, a hot second. So, like, that's my, always big example for why music is, like, big. At least from the films that we've watched.
Yeah, I remember you mentioned music cues a few times.
Yeah.
I know you did it with Justice League. There was another movie back in the day, like, one of the first ones we did that... You mentioned the music cues.
Was it Wonder Woman?
And that didn't strike. It might have been Wonder Woman, and that didn't... Yes, yeah, because of the Hans Zimmer stuff.
All right, so yes, Hans Zimmer.
Yeah. So you were mentioning in one, like, they did a really good job with the music cues there, despite not using pretty much any 80s music
in
an 80s film. So I think that was the one we were talking about.
It was, for at least for, like, Wonder Woman, it was very jarring, because your comparison is... Captain Marvel, who used a very heavy 90s soundtrack, like, and everyone knows those songs. And similarly, Wonder Woman and DC are owned by Warner Brothers, and they have their own log of music, so it's like, why wouldn't you tap into something that already exists for you?
Yeah, which clearly they have when they did it with the Whedon version, where they had music from there.
Yeah.
You know?
I love hearing the White Stripes. That was such a good
thing. And also, they keep... Actually, in a lot of movies, they use a lot of the same songs. Like,
they do?
If you realize, like, in Suicide Squad. Oh, my God. What is that? It's one song that is played everywhere. I want to look it up, but I already looked up the Spawn soundtrack. But there's one song in particular. It is used in Suicide Squad. It is also used in Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's also used in Remember the Titans.
What is the song?
And the thing is, I watched like all three in like the same week at one point, so I'm like, there it is again. Oh, and there too.
I wonder what the song is.
What the yeah, actually the first Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, like, people loved it. I mean, I do too. At the same time, you used like five songs that were in Remember the Titans.
Wait, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh my god. I haven't seen Remember the Titans in so long, so I actually didn't know.
Spirit in the Sky, that was a song. Okay, it was playing in my head a little bit. I had to get to the Spirit in the Sky is used a lot. So they used it in Remember the Titans, but then they also used Ain't No Mountain High Enough, which is used at the end of Is it used in No. I thought it was that used in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, it was. I don't remember. Yeah, I think it's two. It was. I don't remember if it's one or two. But I definitely was
joking. It was used at the end. It was used at the end when they're flying off.
Mm-mm.
They definitely use it at one point.
They do. I can't remember when, but they did. No. You don't have to rack your brain around it, because it is confirmed that they used it in Guardians.
Bugging the crap out of me. And we're back in the Marvel talk. So yeah, let's
twice now.
Let's flip gears.
It's twice now. We've done that.
We talked about Venom. We talked about Guardians. Yeah.
I mentioned Doctor Strange at the top.
Ah, shit. We're already at the hat trick. We're definitely going to get more than that. So.
Fuck.
Let's see if we can get a hat trick of hat tricks. No, kidding. All right.
We're so avoiding the bad points, though.
No. I want to get to the bad points, because this is where the meat of the content is going to be coming from.
Oh, my God.
What?
Should I start?
Yeah, you start, because I started with the good, if we can say those are good. Actually, no, I'm going to say honorable mention, because now that you brought it back to my attention, I will give honorable mention, despite those prosthetics being uncomfortable, they look great. They did look really good.
Yes, 100%.
So I actually kind of want to say that that's my third point, despite, you know, because the dog thing was really kind of bullshit. I think that's my third point.
That's okay.
Those look pretty good.
No, I heavily agree with you.
Those look really good. Yeah.
Again, with the conversation of, like, practical versus their CGI, they did so well on their practical, like, and they moved along with, like, everyone's, like, faces, and I'm like, that's hard to do in prosthetics. Like, that shit's glued to your face.
Yeah. I saw that a lot in Face Off, when they were like, this doesn't let the actor emote.
Right.
Like, they open their mouth and it doesn't move with it. Like, when you scrunch your face, you have, like, a single emotion, like, carved in. And, yeah, like, he could do his thing. John Leguizamo's makeup was like really well done, where I'm like, I wouldn't recognize him if I didn't know it was him.
Right. It took me like, I was like, oh, John Leguizamo's in this film. When the hell is he showing up? And I didn't even realize for a long time that it was like, it was him.
Yeah.
Because he just
When did you realize it? End credits?
No, not the whole film. I realized it like maybe more than a quarter in. I was like, oh, that's John Leguizamo.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you were trying to figure it out. I was like, well, he was the first name in the opening credits.
Yes.
Where are you if we haven't seen you yet?
Right.
Oh, no, we have.
It took way too long for me to realize. But this also comes back into like the fact that like my attention span for this film was so, so sparse.
Awful.
Like, wow. Nothing comprehensively made sense. And I think that's my honorable mention bad, where it's just like, the plot for this film did not make any sense. I did not feel anything for these characters. Joby, this might be my first, like, is this my first or second zero? Like, I would not watch this again.
This might be the second one.
Oh.
I want to say you gave someone else a zero. I just don't remember
which one.
It's
Mortal Kombat, because I would not watch Mortal Kombat.
Probably
again.
That, yeah.
Like, not the new one, the old Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. No, yeah. I remember you mentioned that.
But yes, for realsies, this one, for some reason, I was trying to give this benefit of the doubt and be like, this is not as bad as everyone says. But I'm like,
oh no, it was.
Holy jeez, it was bad. And I don't know if it's also like I don't know if I can forgive it for being like a late 90s movie, because my first bad point really is this feels like a stretch, but this sets the tone for the whole film too. Why were the top credits so freaking long? Because I saw Todd McFarlane's name like billion times. Like, I know this film has to do with him.
Yeah.
And it just goes back to your point, Joby. Did they use like all of their budget on motion graphics and like all of these things to like move the thing forward? And then what happened? But like, it felt, I didn't even time it, but those opening credits felt like they were 10 minutes to just say Todd McFarlane 90 billion times.
I'm like, what song did they use in the beginning? I'm like, all right, they paid the rights for the song, so I might as well just like, hey, let's use all of it.
This is an anime.
Maybe that was what, I don't know. But yeah, those took forever. And it was also very distracting, the fact that, and I think that's what immediately kind of took me out of it, was, again, it felt like a shitty indie music video for a grunge band.
Yes, it really did. I agree. And the worst part about it is that, like, again, it just shows you, like, the technology of the time. And I need to really just watch something from 1997 just to look at it.
A good thing from 97?
Yes, like, something that I can actually, like, look at and compare, because for some reason my brain just keeps going Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but I don't think that that's from that.
Oh, that was earlier.
Yeah.
I already used my Google, so by all means, if you want to go for it.
Okay, maybe I'll Google a movie. Maybe I've seen something from 97 that isn't animated.
I'm even trying to remember what was a 97 movie back then. I'm thinking, like, Forrest Gump was, like, was like 94-ish.
It's the same age as me. Oh, no! I've seen this film. The Fifth Element is from 97.
Oh my god, I love that movie. I just watched it again the other night. That is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh my god. Okay, wait, hilariously, Batman and Robin is from 97.
Oh god, it is. You're right. Yeah.
Okay, but in comparison to Batman and Robin,
And so is Annihilation, just saying.
No, I know, I've said
that. You got three really bad movies right there.
Okay.
You got Spawn, you got Mortal Kombat Annihilation, and you got Batman and Robin.
Yeah, but then you also have things like Liar Liar with Jim Carrey.
Fantastic.
Good Will Hunting.
Oh my god, amazing movie.
Oh my god, what else is it? What the fuck is Cube? Oh my god, Contact is from 97.
I don't know, but I mean, we already got three really good movies
Wait.
You got Liar Liar, you got Good Will Hunting, and you got Fifth Element.
Wait, can I also mention straight up Anaconda is also from 1997?
Oh. I don't think I've actually watch that movie.
Also, I don't know why I didn't think about this. Titanic is from 1997.
Oh shit. No, we can't compare anything, because James Cameron is just like, he always does things, he's like revolutionary concepts.
No, but I know, but I'm thinking, I have not seen Titanic in so long that I'm like, what effects did they use for that film? But
all the things.
I know, that's the thing, where it's like, because they did, oh my god, Titanic is like the pinnacle of like using practical effects, because they basically threw these people into like these situations for filming.
Practical effects on top of CGI, on top of a lot of things. Like, there was a lot.
But I think they were sparse about their CGI, which is why it wasn't like, it wasn't like Spawn. Like, that is, you're right, it is an unfair comparison, but I'm also just like, the fuck? Like, what does it, I think the thing that we haven't figured out in these episodes so far is like, what does it boil down to? Like, is it just people's budgets? Is it their studios? Is it a combination of a little bit of everything?
I think a little bit of everything. At least with this one, it has to be a little bit of everything, because they had to actually up the budget to accommodate for all the CGI. Mm. Like, Spawn originally was greenlit for a budget of $20 million. The scale of the visual effects led by New Line to continually increase the budgets, the project's budget, which grew to 40 to 45 million. So based on the visual effects alone, they doubled the budget for this movie. A third of which was, it grew to 40 to 45 million, a third of which was spent on effects.
Oh my
God. So at least $7 to $8 million
oh my God,
was spent just on the effects, extra, on top of what they already planned for.
Jesus Christ.
What exactly was like the exact bad point again? Was it the opening credits or was it other things?
For me, it really just was the opening credits setting the tone of just being like, yeah, you're just going to have to sit here and watch this and suffer. So I'm thinking about it in terms of like, if I was watching this in a theater in 1997, I don't know who any of these people are, nor do I, unless I knew Todd McFarlane's like name, then I'm just like, what am I watching? Like, at the time, as a kid, would I be enthralled by this? Or am I seeing this through my, like, adult eyes? And it's just painful. Like, if I didn't have the, like, skip button, skip 10 seconds button, and kept pressing it, like, this, that, like, it truly was not enjoyable. Like, that was too long of a time for a movie that is an hour and a half.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, does that fall into the logistics of the movie? I don't know.
I mean,
that was a bold choice.
It was a choice. Are you going into the logistics of the movie, Joby? Because
I think I'm going to start with that a little bit, and specifically. Okay. And this is actually one thing that bugged me, and because especially considering we saw, like, not so much we saw, I was led to believe this was going to be ultra violent.
Yes,
it was not.
Yes,
it was very much not. It was. I mean, granted, it was also like they toned it down from a rated R version to a PG-13 version. I don't know if there is a rated R version. Who knows? Same time, it was really not all that violent. I was expecting more fights. I was expecting they were going to really tap into Michael Jai White's martial arts background and like let him kind of go to town with these things. And I saw him kind of throw only like a handful of punches, like not against a non-CGI character. That was the only time, you know? In the very beginning of the movie, in like the first 5 minutes or so, not including the opening credits, that was the only time you see him throw a punch and like actually have a little bit of a fight sequence. Everything else was all gunshot. It was all that. And I think that will be my bad point, is just the logistics of these gunfights were just like, what? Like, I understand this is a supernatural thing. It just didn't make sense. A lot of the times it did not make sense. Where in the first one, like in his second mission / death scene, right? He gets led to this one spot. He sees the bombs. This woman shoots off like 12 rounds and somehow only hits him once.
Can I also mention that scene is also my second bad point for logistics?
Fantastic.
Oh my God. I love that. Okay. I feel like this is one of the few times that we are actually like,
on the same page with our point. Yeah, no, this really is.
I'm shocked.
But yeah, no, continue with that, because I'm going to jump into other... do you want to jump into that, or do you want to keep going with the gunshots and
stuff? I just want to mention with that scene, of his death scene, I mean, now that I'm saying it out loud, it does make sense, but I'm just like, he destroyed, and like, him getting all of the goop and stuff, and like, being set on fire, he literally, he blew up, like, an entire section, and I'm like, what kind of factory did they go in, and why did it just blow up, like, all of that stuff?
Yeah, I don't really know what kind of factory that was. It was, like, in Botswana somewhere, I don't know, like, literally, I read that earlier where, like, at least in the comics, it was Botswana. I just don't know what how relevant that is to the whole thing, we should know that this is an atomic factory or something. I don't
know. If it is, it's just, like, they didn't have enough time for them to leave without harm, you know?
Oh, yeah, they were definitely... Unless there was, like, a helipad right outside that door, and then they blew off, and...
Even that, I mean, then it's Resident Evil. It's, like, the end of every Resident Evil.
Oh, yeah. Fly off from the explosion. We are safe. No, we're not.
They always do that.
Yeah. That's fair. Oh, I mean, there's another part to that where it's my second bad point. Mm. I will mention, or second or third. I don't know how I'm gonna.
Technically,
I'm gonna frame this, but...
you've already mentioned my second bad point. If you want to merge,
all right, perfect.
But
I
will have to say I do want to mention one more of the logistics. But if you would like to go first, go first.
Again, I'm just going based strictly off of, like, the guns and everything. So they go to that dinner party / whatever the hell that was. When you first see him, like, suit up as Spawn, right? She comes out from a balcony and shoots from a standing point. She doesn't move. She doesn't do anything. She just stands there and rapid fire. This guy is running across the thing. Somehow he gets hit multiple times, despite being missed multiple times in mm-hmm. the first scene they were together. And he hits nothing.
Yep.
Not a thing. Yeah. Only until later on, they end up face to face. He throws her into the guardrail. And she says, "You don't have the guts. He was just shooting at you. You lit him on fire. How would he not? Why would you think of this? Why would you say this? I don't know."
You know how we always, like, that truly brings in the painful part of painful films that we are.
The dialogue behind it, just the thought, I'm like, why? Sure, you gotta egg him on to kick you over the guardrail? No.
Is this what you felt like with the cringiness of the dialogue in Batman and Robin? Because... Yes. I heard.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's kind of the feel that I got for this film, but I felt like the Batman and Robin at least had the flair of being puns, while in this film it was just actually garbage writing.
I don't know. It to me, yeah, that was there needs to be a reason. Like, you wrote this line in there for a reason. If it doesn't make sense anymore, why does it still exist? How is there not a rewrite? You know?
I mean, but here's the thing, though. With rewrites and stuff like that, I just don't think that people... I just don't think people really would rewrite something like that, because it's not... It's not of the time.
Tell her to improv. Fuck it.
Yeah,
tell her to improv.
Hey,
this
improver.
Doesn't make sense anymore. Figure out another one.
Not everyone's a good... Everyone's not good
I don't
at
know.
Improvisation.
Where was I? Yes, all the shooting. It's kind of bullshit.
Yes.
Another example of it was when he shoots the Violator in his clown form, and then he morphs into the monster form, the reptile form, and he keeps trying to shoot at him. I'm like, dude, it didn't do shit to him earlier. How is him, now transformed, gonna do anything?
Oh my god.
This, like, it didn't make sense.
No, not at all. I agree. I 100%
agree. A lot of him didn't make sense, where I'm like, there is no point, despite him having, like, a training sequence, or, like, now you're going to be formidable. There is no point at that. Like, that really was a turning point of, like, you were actually going to be helpful, like, now, you know? I just didn't see it. I didn't have that moment. And, again, it left me wanting more, especially if you're going to rely on so many gunfights. I'm like, dude, you got to make these things spectacular.
Right.
And y'all didn't.
Right.
So, moving on. I guess my second bad point kind of goes into a little bit of everything we were saying before, was the lack of emotion or reaction from people is astounding in this movie. Holy shit.
Good point.
It boggled my mind.
Again, the most emotion that I felt from anyone, John Leguizamo's character.
Yes.
And again, he is the Kano equivalent from Mortal Kombat 2021. Like, I didn't want to like your character, but you were the only one that I can, like, feel any kind of emotion for. And obviously it's gonna be, like, anger, but, like, fuck. Like, I wasn't convinced about Wanda in any way.
Not at all. And it bothered me. There were so many things that were, like, it was, like, left unsaid. It was left just so open-ended, specifically at the especially at the end. And I will get to the end of it in a moment. But for one thing, like, the kid actors, I'm sorry. I mean, I know you're a kid, but you can be better. There are really good kid actors out there.
There are very good kid actors out there.
Let's look at, like, in Home, like, back in the 90s, Home Alone, like, Macaulay Culkin was amazing, and he led that entire movie.
Is it because of the genre, though? Because I feel like, this is definitely not true, because a lot of the times comedians I know are very, like, methodical, but then again, in comedy movies, it's like, it feels like you are allowed to be more free.
That's fair, but at the same time, like, there's no reaction from these kids. Like the homeless kid. He sees his dad get picked up from by this monster and get thrown across, and his reaction is so flat.
Yes. Yes.
You just saw your dad get thrown into a wall, and you have no reaction.
Yeah, like, I don't know anybody that just straight up just, like, looks at some, like, it feels like bystander effect at, like, the worst possible way, and it's for somebody that's in your own, like, family.
I think bystander effect works more when you don't know the person.
Right, you're right.
That's the thing. Like, if it's a stranger on the street, and I took these in sociology class, this is actually one thing that actually sunk in. If you saw someone get attacked on the street, the odds of someone stepping in is very low. Specifically for the sake of, like, oh, I've seen someone get attacked. I don't want to get hurt in the process trying to help, especially if I don't have the means to do it. So, like, that is a big factor. Like, Lord knows, like, how many times, like, I've seen, like, a big argument, and, like, there's definitely, like, oh, this could potentially get violent, and then, like, you know what, let's wait for security to come here. It's not on me to stop this. You know, like, that happens. Same time, like, if I see, like, oh, who's fighting in the food court? Oh, that's my cousin. I'm gonna run over there and be like, what's going on? Like, how can I help? Not just because of my martial arts background, but I'm like, no, there is a emotional connection now to what's happening. You're gonna have a bigger reaction. So for a kid to see this monster attack his dad and kind of have just like, oh no, dad. Like, what is that? Same thing with, like, Cyan, where, like, she's so attached to this dog, and then the second that, like, Terry is like, oh no, he'll find his way home, it's fine, she's like, okay. Like, wait, what? No, you were just, that was, like, the biggest driving force of you doing anything in this movie so far has been this dog, and yet now you're just like, okay, he'll be fine, sure.
It 180'd so fast for that character that it then, I think that continues to add onto the hard believability about anybody.
Yes.
And, like, the motivations for people just fit. Again, another movie where everyone just falls flat.
Mm-hmm. Even, you know, even though I said that Michael Jai White's acting was pretty spot on with, like, him in the Spawn suit, his death scene, it felt flat too, like,
the fire was more interesting to me.
You were lit on fire. You don't make any audible reactions until the explosion and you scream out Wanda.
Yes. Yes.
How?
Yes.
Why would you not do anything else? Like, why would you not react to the fire touching your body? Oh no, this hurts. You would say something.
So literally, that scene is just like, so it crawls up from his arm up and he's like not moving.
He's watching it happen, and the second that it finally engulfs his entire body, there's explosions now. You're gonna scream her name to the heavens. What?
Like, you're not even trying to put it out. I mean, I don't think that you're supposed to put it out if the rest of your body is, like, covered in the goop, but
that would be your human reaction.
That is true. But I don't know, he's like an elite force of some sort. So I'm like, he should have some kind of, like, training. for this too.
We had that training back in school. It's called stop, drop, and roll. Okay, but you didn't move at all. You just waited to get exploded. No. Okay. Whatever. But then, again, very end of the movie was probably the biggest example of zero reactions. Bruh. Or even shitty reactions. Climax of the movie. This little girl is friendly with Spawn the entire fucking movie. Right?
Right.
He comes out of this fire, like, after coming back from hell. Now she's afraid of him?
Yes!
Like, she's,
what
like,
the fuck
worried about
that?
Approaching you? It's like, you were up in his face multiple times. Why wouldn't you be, like, the olive branch to be like, you are a good person, and now you can have a conversation with Wanda and Terry and see what that's... There was zero closure in that family.
No,
nothing. There was never another point where those two have a conversation. What? How is there no closure here? This is the end of the movie. This is the climax of the movie. And at the same time, you know what happens after that? They come out of that fire. The family sits on the couch. Lets a homeless kid walk in with their dog. They don't react to the dog coming back in. They don't react to the kid walking into this random kid walking into their house. No reaction to that kid. No reaction to the two guys who came out of the fire sitting on their wall.
Do they even meet?
I don't. No, it doesn't matter. Like, what do you mean? Wait. What do you mean, have they met?
No, I'm just saying,
I'm curious about that.
The reason why I'm asking, have they met, where I'm like, do they... I'm now reaching for them and, like, the progression of the story where it's like, have they met so there's a reason for him to be there? Or, like, do they know each other in some way where it's like, could we make a reach of some sort? But...
Does it?
No.
Fucking matter
no,
the fact
no,
that
it doesn't matter.
You were just tied up in a chair. This guy came out of freaking nowhere, stabbed this gloop of a freaking monster to death in your living room. How would you not at least try to strike up a conversation and be like, what is happening right now? What is this?
Is this why everyone from the 90s' trauma response is just to ignore it? Like, because we were taught to just ignore it? Because this is what it sounds like. Yeah. Like, I feel like I've been talking about this for, like, a little bit outside of, like, podcast world, but it's, like, everyone's responses to things growing up seems to be in relation to media that they've watched. And I watch a shit ton of media. So, like, 80s sitcoms were, like, my jam. And thinking about this now in, like, a psychological stance, like, why is everyone... just ignoring what just happened and pretending it doesn't exist. Like, or it never existed. Like, it just didn't happen. Like, they just go into, everything's okay. There's no fire. Everything's fine.
I guess so.
Like, isn't that, like, strange?
I mean, this is a huge example of it here, where they're like, oh, hey, the monster's done. Okay, we can go back to our normal, peaceful life, despite...
And then nothing's resolved.
A hell monster is sitting on our fucking floor.
Right.
Is now petting our dog.
Right.
Like, what is happening? How are you...
And how is this also PG-13 for, like, some... Like, I need to Google this, like, post-recording, because I'm like, if people today are... reacting poorly to something like Montero or like Call Me By Your Name by Lil Nas X and like very obvious depiction of like hell, like what were people's reactions to this? Like, there's very, very blatant like images of hell.
Yes. I don't even think that the one you mentioned wasn't exactly just the depiction of hell, but it was also like the I think they're just like all homophobic. They were all homophobic about the whole
thing,
too.
That is true. That is true.
I think that was the bigger concern. But I remember back in the 90s, you had the movie Dogma, where a lot of people had problems with it being sacrilegious.
Oh, I don't actually know that one. I don't remember that one.
It's Kevin Smith. Mm. I actually haven't seen it still, but I know that there was like a big thing that like people were protesting the creation of this movie because it's sacrilegious to Jesus and hell and all this other stuff.
I didn't know that. Okay.
I mean, I don't know if it's if the depictions of hell is really a big factor. Like, I'm curious about that too. In that, you know, what were people's thoughts on Little Nicky?
Oh, that is
a
true.
Few years later, I know it wasn't his best movie. That people like, I really like it, but I know it wasn't as well received as like Billy Madison or The Wedding Singer or things like that. So I don't know. But I guess your final bad point.
This is not a bad point. This is just an observation. But I guess this is just like, should I have expected this film to be very Michael Bay? Because that's all I could think about. Hmm. Well, I not truly like Michael Bay, but like the elements of Michael Bay, which is very explodey. Very, lots of like action-y things that just seem there for the sake of action. And again, referencing the explosion of the factory that they're in by just one fire being set off. And I...
No, I mean, no, there were bombs put around that factory. Oh. There was also that. So it wasn't just his fire. It was just, I guess the fire was timed with said bombs.
I guess, but it...
To the point where she really didn't even have to light him on fire. Like, he would have died anyway.
Everyone was being... I guess that's what it is. My bad point is, like, they were excessive to the point of, like, it, for me, wasn't, like, as enjoyable. But then again, that's from the mindset of, like, us now, where I'm like, it's a joke to do excessive explosions. Like, I think I was talking about this with Joe the other day, or somebody the other day, where you're a cool person if you walk away from an explosion. Like, that was a very real trope that we had in media for a very long time. And what comes to mind first is always MacGruber from SNL. That's it. And like the GIF.
That's funny you say that, but what comes to my mind is when they call that out in The Other Guys.
I've never seen The Other Guys.
Oh my god, it is so good. It is such a good parody movie of like what buddy cop thing should be.
Is that with is that with Will Ferrell? That is Will Ferrell.
It's Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg.
Ugh, I can't watch Mark Wahlberg films
though. Co-stars of that movie is Michael Keaton, The Rock, Sam Jackson, Rob Riggle.
Ooh.
One of the Wayans brothers. I don't remember which one, unfortunately, and I apologize. But the cast is fantastic. Oh, Eva Mendes plays Will Ferrell's wife.
Yes, that one I remember. yes. A plus.
The movie is hysterical. Steve Coogan is one of the main guys too. Mm-hmm. Like he's like the Ponzi scheme guy, whatever. That movie's fantastic. And then there's one part where they go to investigate this one bank in Jersey. They walk up to the building and the building explodes. So they get blown back and they're like, oh my god, this is bullshit. Like how do they do this? How do they just walk away from explosions? Like, oh my god, I can't hear. Everything hurts.
Oh my
it's
god.
Like, Star Wars is bullshit. He's like, did you just badmouth Star Wars? Star Wars is amazing. Fuck you.
Oh god.
That's all I think about. I'm like, yeah. Like, anytime I see, like, even just like gunfights now, it kind of bugs me. I'm like, that. Your ears would be destroyed.
Right. I think...
You're shooting this in the middle of a hallway. I was just watching a show today, Wu Assassin, on Netflix. Just because it actually has Louis Tan from from Mortal Kombat. He plays one of the guys. One of the guys from The Raid, I can't remember his name. It's also hard to pronounce. But it was basically like, I pulled up Netflix. They were like, oh, hey, check out these AAPI-led movies shows and stuff. And that was on there. I'm like, I'm going to check it out. Why not? Let's go. And this dude in like one of the first scenes shoots two guys in a storage crate, like one of those metal things you see on like the docks. You know what I'm talking about? Those metal shipping the shipping containers.
Oh, yeah,
the big metal
okay.
shipping containers. He has two guys in there, he shoots them both. I'm like, you know how much echo is in that shit? Your ears would be bleeding.
The fantastical, man. Again, it brings back like so many of like our points from like other films where it's like we're nitpicky where it needs we're getting nitpicky about specific things, and like the realistic version of like certain things like seems to like matter sometimes.
It depends. It matters when they want it to and it doesn't when they don't.
Right.
And that was actually one thing I was talking about my friend where we were considering like, oh, we should totally try to make this whole fight sequence and choreograph it ourselves because we're both martial artists. We understand some basic things of filmmaking and stunt choreography. And like, we should definitely try to do a thing, but also make it super realistic of like, we want to make this kind of like really gritty and real to the point where we want to have everyone think, I never want to get into a street fight ever in my life. Because it's going to be bad. Because like the realism of a street fight, of what could actually happen, is gigantic. You know, people don't think about certain things where like it actually, you know, people don't think it's like, oh, it actually hurts if you don't know how to throw a proper punch. Let alone any like blood and gore if you fall off this and you get hit with this thing. Like someone gets hit in the face with a wrench in some movies, they get hit, they bounce back, they're still in the fight. No.
Yeah, I don't know much about stunt choreography, but I've only really watched RIP this channel, Unisanes, from last year with Markiplier and Crank Gameplays, and they went through the motions of like learning what it takes to do stunt fights, and it's like, yeah, it's very meticulous about like what you're supposed to do, where you're supposed to go, how you're supposed to react, and it's a lot to remember. Like your body really has to remember these motions.
Yeah, so like I was, and that was part of the corridor crew where they talk about some of these fight choreography, like fight sequences, and how they do certain stuff, and it's like your body wants to tell you to do a certain thing. It helps to have martial arts training because now you know how to react, you know how to fall certain ways or you're not going to hurt yourself. Same time, there's a different way you're going to deliver a punch in a fight than you are on camera. And things like that, there's always a thing you have to factor in. But then at the same time, Corridor Crew also does, if this was R-rated, what would it look like? So they did something like with Captain America, where you have Captain America throws a shield, it smashes through windows, it embeds itself into cement walls. He threw that at that guy. How is he still standing? He shouldn't be knocked out. He should be nearly decapitated. So we're going to CGI it so it looks like he's decapitated and he's going to get knocked over when he walks back over. We're going to this whole thing where when Falcon swoops in and dropkicks this guy into the glass, realistically, if he wouldn't just bounce off and maybe break the glass, no, part of his head would smash and blood.
I'm also just like, how much protection does his back have? Because wouldn't that shatter some bones in the back of your whole body?
So like you might have like knocked him out, but realistically, like,
how did he swim away?
There's a lot of people who are murdered.
Yeah, like straight up, either somebody is like paralyzed somewhere, or like that guy straight up like drowned. Like, yep. I don't know how the hell he like survived.
Yep. So that's actually a fun thing. I might even just watch those again when we're done with this.
Okay.
But I think so you hit all three of your bad points, right?
My last bad point was this. It leans into like the logistics of it where I'm like,
yes,
there's just so much explosions that I did not love it. And additional like logistic point, I don't know if this is like such a 90s writing thing, but I really didn't like the fact that like Wynn had to get open heart surgery and he's the catalyst to, if his heart rate goes below a specific thing, he will detonate a shit ton of bombs. Like, what is the thinking of people from back in like the day where that is a thing? Like, you could just,
I don't know,
hit a trigger.
Was that the time where we're like, oh hey, the concept of a dead man switch is now a thing?
Yes.
I'm kind of curious. I want to look that up. Of when was the first time a dead man switch was used in a film? Ooh. And you know what I'm talking about with the dead man switch, right?
Yeah.
Not just the heart thing, but like, all right, if I lose grip of this trigger,
yes.
Explosions.
We're all done. I'm sorry.
They basically had the same concept of like, oh, if you kill me, a lot of people die.
This is like the worst example of it, but I just keep thinking about Rush Hour. Because Rush Hour did it.
yeah, they did. And Rush Hour, I'm pretty sure that was before 97.
No,
that was like 98, 99, wasn't it? Okay, yeah. No, we did not get to my last one. And
that's why I was like, this is something, we were done.
Yeah. No, not yet. This is something that we easily could talk about for a decent amount. How confusing this movie was.
No. We've sprinkled this in throughout the
We sprinkled
entire...
it in. Let's break this down a little bit. I have a few points where, like, let's see if you actually remember a few stuff.
Okay, let's go.
So, like, A, the plot and storytelling was just all over the place. Between him coming from hell, him learning about his powers, trying to chime in with with Martin Sheen's character being this like global conspiracy thing, and then Terry trying to figure out all that stuff, that plot. There was him trying to get back with his family. There was this and that. Like, it was all just so confusing where, like, I just didn't really understand. It actually kind of felt like the whole Martin Sheen having a bomb attached to his chest and that whole concept of, like, Terry discovering this, like, I don't even remember what the fucking plot was of what Martin Sheen's plan was.
It was to release a virus, like, a bioweapon, and, like,
Seemed so shoehorned, where, like, I'm like, did you really need this? You could have taken that out, given us more things with his family.
Yes.
And him trying to figure out what the hell is going on, then that.
The additional plot point that I, like, very clearly remember is that they're using Spawn to kill somebody and then release the bioweapon. But I'm also just like, is this what actually happened in the movie, or am I conflating it to Resident Evil?
No, that sounds right.
Okay.
It sounds like he's supposed to kill Martin Sheen so that it's going to set off a bunch of bombs, and it makes sense if you know the comics, which I read up on a little bit before we started this. Right. So maybe it was a good thing we started a little bit later, so I could do a little bit more research.
You're welcome.
Yeah. The whole idea of Spawn and, like, why the devil, never going to pronounce his name, running thing of this podcast, I cannot pronounce names.
Check mark for everybody playing Movie Masochist Bingo.
Most of the times, yup. Every person he kills, like, and the devil wants him to kill as many people as possible, because that means there's more people in his army to fight against heaven.
Right.
So them sending off a bomb that's going to kill 8 million people, hey, you just got potentially 8 million soldiers.
Right.
So that was the concept. I don't think they really clarify that in the movie.
No,
I got that
from
the blur on the internet.
I would never have really... I don't remember that, because the antagonist to me was just John Leguizamo's character. And, like, the devil was, like, he was the...
Just there.
What is a seconder? Like a deuteragonist? Somebody can fact check me.
I believe that sounds right.
Because I know, because, like, for third, it'd be, like, tertiary, but I just don't remember what a seconder.
He was basically, like, the shittier dark side.
Yes! Yes!
Like, you had the main one of Steppenwolf, you had the main one of the Violator. You have dark side, you get a little glimpse of him, but he's really not there yet. And then you have the devil.
Yeah.
Not pronouncing his name.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. Starts with an M. Whatever. But either way, just really confusing to the point where, like, this plot point did not need to exist.
They could have done the thing where they sprinkle it at the end and just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to introduce him in the sequel. And they would have given more space for other things.
Yeah. And actually now, realizing all these scenes put together, it kind of made it a little bit more clear, but me having to do research, that's not a good thing. Why was the clown pulling the strings on Martin Sheen so much? Not only to kill Spawn, but to plant the bomb and all this other stuff. I'm like, that he didn't really make sense to me. And then for them to be like, oh, you died, but 5 years later, now you get to go back to Earth. And then you have to do that in voiceover. But then everything breaking, and then them breaking that down into showing that to Spawn was confusing too. The good, like his mentor, Cogliostro, whatever the fuck his name is, he came out of fucking nowhere. I don't understand anything what he does. You show up randomly, kind of don't do anything. You're like the Raiden from the 2021 Mortal Kombat, where, like, you show up, you kind of do a thing, but it's really not as important as we really need you to be, despite you supposed to be an all-powerful / really, really helpful. And also, one thing that was extremely confusing, specifically, was it took me almost an hour into the movie to realize that alleyway wasn't hell. That was
right,
on Earth.
Right.
What? And you know when I actually realized when that was actually on Earth? Was when the dog went with him to that fucking alleyway. Thank you, Spaz, for helping me understand parts of this movie.
That is it, yeah.
Like, there's way too many things that are too confusing about this. And then for them to do all these, like, weird, like, transitions from one scene to another, and with the fire and this thing, and now he's going to be all dark and brooding on top of this tower, and the cave is going to now do the sequence so that it transitions to the next scene. A lot of it seemed unnecessary, and a lot of it was distracting to the point where I just could not really track and follow this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, with all that said, what would you like to rate this one?
Oh my god, I said it earlier. Like, a flat-out zero, my dude. Like, it is so, so awful. Like, because I cannot tell you the beginning, middle, end, that truly cannot quantifiably be a good film. Like, I can pull things, like, as much as I want to, but, like, the other films that we've watched have a beginning, middle, and end that I can, like,
you can actually track the plot.
Yeah.
This one just seems way too all over the place.
Yeah.
I will say, I would watch this one more time.
Oh, my God.
Ever.
Oh, my God.
Once.
Drinking game, Joby? Drinking game?
Either drinking game plus with people who have never seen this before either. And be like, do you understand this shit or am I just fucking stupid? Like, if you understand this, that just means I missed a lot of things and I'm dumb.
You need to watch this.
They don't understand this either.
You need to watch this with people that don't know the source material. That's the caveat of that situation.
Yeah, and that's really something that just really hurts this movie. Is if you're going into this blind, at least from our standpoint, you're not gonna understand shit. If you know the source material, if you know a little bit about what it was before, like, I don't know if they ever mentioned Cagliostro's backstory at all. I read it earlier. He's supposed to be from the Bible.
Shit.
He is Cain. He is the first person to murder someone.
Shit.
And that's why he becomes, like, a hellspawn, but then he goes against the devil and fights for the side of good later on. I don't understand how he does this. I don't think they go into it, and maybe they did, and I just don't remember, or it was way too quick. Who knows?
Usually I'm very good at picking up those details. Like, I know I've done that in previous podcasts, but I can't even tell you that. Like, everything was so all over the place, I could not tell you what details about people were important or not.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's a little bit of why I'm, like, slightly curious to watch this again and be like, did they explain these things, or was I just zoned and I just zoned out, or did they just completely drop the ball? Kind of like how there was zero fucking closure with this goddamn family.
Right.
And I don't know, but that was that one. I agree. I am definitely, I think this is along the lines as bad. Actually, no, this one is worse.
Ooh.
Than Fantastic Four.
Ooh.
2015.
Ooh.
We finally found one that was worse.
Ooh, that's so good. I mean, good in the way for the podcast. Good
in the worst way possible, yes.
I'm shocked because truly that is your least favorite film.
That was my worst one. That was definitely my least favorite so far.
Right.
Until now.
Oh my god.
Okay. And I think that... And the thing is, like, I didn't even watch this one twice yet. I didn't even watch this one twice. The other one I did.
I know. And I, again, like you, I was very tempted to watch a second time, but it was, like, this is kind of the same thing that happened with me in Justice League, where it's like, I can't get through this film. This is not one, like, it's not one where, like, I start over from the beginning. It's like, I start from where I started, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And it's hard, and I tried to do my best with this one where I was like, oh, I'm gonna watch it over 2 days, and then I didn't do that, but I feel like if I had the chance to redo it, maybe I would watch it over 2 days. I feel like I could have grasped it a little bit better if there was anything to grasp.
No, I mean, I would try doing it in one shot just so everything's kind of fresh and I don't have to kind of like remember right off the jump of like what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, like the next day, but oh well. Odds of me rewatching this one is very, 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 very slim. I don't know if I have enough varies there.
I love that this is, we have found the film. That you're like,
yes.
It nearly cannot be saved.
So, because I get like, and what we've realized with a lot of these films is plot.
Yes.
Goes a long way. and now I was talking about with my buddy Doug from the martial arts school, something like Invincible, right? Where the graphics and everything like that, it's not perfect. It's not like the most amazing. It's not like Avatar level things. Like, I think Avatar The Last Airbender has some of the best animation around.
Yes.
Invincible is not on that level, but it is, in my mind, it is pretty close to the level of storytelling. It is a very compelling story, and it catches you. Like, I think Kevin Smith said it in the in his podcast, where if you take the first 40 minutes, like the full 40 minutes of what the first episode was, it was really good movie. It was a really good show. Like, a really good first episode, pilot episode, where you gave a story and you're like, okay, cool. This is like a thing about a son trying to be like his dad, trying to have this like kind of like cool, like little family moment. Let's see where it goes from here. And then you get the thing in the post credits and you're like, holy fucking shit. If you did not know anything about the comics, holy shit. So yes, storytelling wise, again, it is on that level. Being able to be a good storyteller helps a lot. And I'm sure Todd McFarlane is a great storyteller with the comics he's done, because that's really long running comic. Like,
yeah,
it's a really well known character. Somehow I fell really short in this movie. Like, they're trying to cram too much into a short time, and they needed more time, honestly.
I'm curious about whether or not that this was one of those situations where they think that they could have talked about it more in a second film, or if it's one of those situations where they needed to put everything in one film because they didn't think that they would have a shot of, like...
Probably the latter, because... It took a while for him to find like a studio that he felt comfortable working with.
Yeah.
But also, they probably should have done a better job of giving them more time to shoot, because that is also in the Wikipedia of the shooting schedule was 2 months.
Oh, that's short.
63 days.
That's short.
That's a very short time. So for you to cram a big story into that amount of time and a lot of moving pieces, yeah, but that was.
Remember it was too much. That this was our, this is the same as Elektra. Where they did yes. not, they were strapped for time,
mm-hmm.
and it was not great yeah. for them.
It was not, but at least it had a succinct plot of like, oh, I see how you're going from A to B to C. This one, not so much.
Right. Very, so, very true.
Oh, well, we got our first zero, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm deeply shocked, because is next week our final week?
Nope.
Oh, no, we're not.
We still got three more,
we
dude.
Have three? Oh, shit, never mind.
We still got three more movies, unless we want to cut one of them out.
We'll see.
We'll talk after we're done. We'll talk after we're done recording
this. I thought
we
were almost done. Okay, wait. Because I was, like, very excited to watch our last film. But, well, on that note, if anybody else has watched this film and...
Can fucking explain it to us? That'd be
yes,
great.
Yes, that was...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in.
No, that's fine, because that is literally what I was trying to, like, put into words, where I'm just like, what the fuck happened? Can you explain? Can you give us a really good explainer of what happened in this film? Because, oh boy, as you heard from...
We need it.
Yeah, as you've heard from all of our, like, complaints, we could not get through this film, and it was our first goose egg, double goose egg. Please send us your thoughts our way. We're on Instagram at Movie Masochists or Twitter at Movie Masochist. We are very much looking forward to hearing other people's thoughts about this film. So again, thank you for joining us for the Movie Masochist podcast. I have been Kim.
And I have been Joby.
We'll see you next time.
Hopefully we didn't scare you off with this movie. I apologize. Bye.
Bye.